I'm Bronwyn Williams, futurist and trained analyst, and this is Local Logic, where we help South Africa's technology leaders unlock the real power of data and AI in their technology stack. Join me as I sit down with Dr. Bongani Andy Mbaso, CTO of Altron Group, on building secure data and AI-driven digital transformation. Local Logic, a technology podcast brought to you by Altron, because local expertise drives global results. Today I'm joined by the group CTO of Altron, Dr. Bongani Andy Mbaso, and Musa Kalenga, the CEO of Brave Group. And today we're going to be talking about how to future-proof your institution with AI and data-driven insight. Andy, how, from your perspective, can firms leverage data and insight for innovation?
Thanks, Bronwyn. And firstly, I just want to say I'm very excited to start this podcast with you. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. A key insight that we've shared a lot with our customers and continues to be, I think, a barrier when customers don't realize this is, one, you can actually use AI to transform data. Most of our customers think of it the other way around. They want to clean their data. They want to make sure that it's stored properly and all of that, which is great, right? I mean, it's just good data practice and data governance. But the challenge is you then forget that you can actually use AI to help you accelerate those very basic processes anyway, right? So I'll give an example. In Altron, we had been trying to do a single view of customer project, which is looking at enterprise customers in a single way across all of our opcos. It was something that had previously taken 18 months and it yielded very little success. We switched the approach to go, can we use AI to recognize patterns to go, perhaps this is actually the same customer. There's just one thing here that's been changed or is captured, slightly differently. And I can tell you now that we now have a single view of customer across, all of our operating companies. So that's just one example of how one can use AI to transform the data that you have into the insights that you actually need to run your organization. It's not always about the hype. Often when people think about AI, they think about, an AI that can take over someone's job, an AI employee, and how do you onboard them? That's all good. But sometimes you need to go back to the boring stuff and actually leverage it as a tool to help you to fix that stuff.
So what are some of the common quick wins that you think more organizations should be taking advantage of right now when it comes to the availability of data and AI that is available to all organizations right now?
I think the ubiquity of the tool is an advantage. I always say to my customers, your people are already using the tools. So you may not want to adopt AI, but it is happening anyway, whether you like it or not. The question is whether you want to be part of that process and shape it with your policies, or whether you just want to leave it to chance, right? And people kind of do whatever they want. So I think for me, I see that as a very low hanging fruit to go, how do we bring these tools in a governed way into the organization? I'll talk about Altron because that's the context that I'm in now. We made a decision around which tools we allow and which tools we don't allow. We did a test and we found out that there was 120 plus tools that were being used by employees across the organization. Some of them, as you can imagine, did not meet our policies, our privacy policies, etc. And some of them did. And those that didn't, we unsanctioned them. And those that do, we sanction and encourage, right? So that's kind of the way that I think organizations can start to, to encourage, the innovation, because it's happening anyway, right? It's about whether you want to be part of it or not. So for me, that's a very quick win. How do you start to bring a level of governance around this, into the organization? It's quite similar to when laptops started coming into the fray in the early 90s. People started bringing their own laptops to work, and IT administrators were like, oh my goodness, you are going to leave the workplace with my data. What am I going to do? and look where we are now, right? Every single person, pretty much works with a laptop. And I think we're in that early phase now with these AI tools where people are like, what are we going to do? My data is going to leave the organization. But trust me, in 5 years' time, it's going to be normal for everybody to be using that. So that's a very, very quick win. There's been a lot said about productivity and other things like that. I like to summarize it in this way, right? Go back to boring. What are those basic processes, those things that make your beer taste better, and assess whether data or even AI can help you make that process a little bit faster, a little bit better, a little bit cheaper. It'll be different depending on the context of your organization and how your customers are reacting to your products. That's where I would start. I would not start with the hype of let's get AI employees. When you start that way backwards, that's when you end up with a lot of failed projects. Keep it grounded and real and solve real problems. The first principles of business have not changed. You are solving a problem either by selling a product or providing a service to your customers. And ultimately, the guy that wins is the one that with a better product or with a cheaper service. It's really that simple.
Amazing. So Musa, let's turn to you. How can companies turn AI innovation into a lasting competitive advantage?
Yeah, it's a great question, Bronwyn. And I think there's a couple of ways to think about it, right? You can think about AI conceptually as existing products that we can use to solve for problems that are pervasive in our society and our country, our economies. If you think about the social ills that we face, from health, education, poverty, etc., you can, choose any one of those challenges and apply AI to it. And so when organizations think about existing technologies, that's a very simple way to solve for that really core challenge that we'd face in our country. And then you think about situations where you actually build something fit for purpose. We all know Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital is a massive, massive hospital in South Africa. They've undertaken to be able to digitize over 800,000 patient records to make access to healthcare far easier, to ensure that the waiting times for people coming to Baragwanath, Chris Hani Baragwanath, are reduced, to ensure there's dignity for older people coming to be able to seek a hospital and healthcare solutions. So those are clear stratas of where AI can solve problems, from existing technology to stuff that's very basic to build, and then the real ground up stuff that can, shift the needle.
Amazing. So Musa, staying with you, how would you advise businesses or organizations make the leap from collecting good quality data, like you say, to getting actual actionable insights out of that data?
Well, I think back to the initial conversation around, being able to run POCs. I'm a big fan of experimentation. And so the idea around being able to hold your assumptions lightly and find ways to rapidly test them is really, really important. What that means is that, you have to create the appetite to have the conversations that are not necessarily always going to convert. In fact, in my view, 10% of most initiatives that are from an innovation point of view actually get over the line. So you have to be comfortable with 90% of the time it not working, whatever it may be. But it is important that that roadmap exists and is committed to. Secondly, you need to be able to get people that understand what it takes to be able to persevere through multiple stages of iteration and understanding. The major challenge often is that we get married to the solution because we think it's going to be the next best thing. And when you get married to the solution, you get blinkers about what could potentially change. What I found to be the most challenging thing for many senior executives is to hold those assumptions so likely that when you get alternative data to inform a shift or a pivot, that you actually take it into consideration. A lot of people get married to the fact that they put together the business case, they put together the POC, they did all the groundwork, and now the data or the research or the outcomes are telling you something different, and that mental shift is quite difficult to make. So my advice is always try and hold those assumptions lightly and try and make people responsible for being able to challenge those kind of conversations. Because if you are in business as usual mode, it means that you're going to approach that with a very low tolerance for risk or for deviation. And so, certain individuals need to have the mandate to be able to challenge and ensure that people are kept in that constant state of discomfort, as one would call it, when you're discovering and you're innovating.
Andy, what are the essential foundations for innovation in today's market environment? What advice do you have for organizations who take Moose's advice on board there and say, okay, so I need to be adaptive and reactive to changes. When the data changes, I need to change my solution, but who are at the same time investing large amounts of money into solutions? What advice can you give to those sorts of organizational leaders about having iterative, adaptive solutions when it comes to enterprise scale innovation?
Very often, innovators, technologists, even business people can often get married to the idea. And we forget that the fundamentals of business haven't changed, right? I mean, profit is fundamentally the value that customers see, on your products. And that's why you get, paid that particular profit. And so when we do anything, whether it is an AI experiment, a data analytics experiment, we are doing it to solve a particular customer problem. That customer may be internal, that customer may be external. That is the main thing. What the idea is and how you do it, that is secondary. And often when you switch it around and you put the customer second and then you put the idea and how you solve it first, that's when issues start to come. And that's why I like to say here at Altron, we innovate at the customer. And by the way, the customer doesn't necessarily always mean external. It could be an internal customer. But we are here to solve customers' problems, right? That's why they partner with us. We're not here to fall in love with this idea over that idea. Yes, when we get an insight, we'll use that insight to hopefully accelerate how, you know, our speed, the speed at which we can solve that customer problem, but we're not married to that particular, you know, idea. So I think that is the core insight that I would advise organizations to have, is your business has not changed. You are solving or delivering value to a customer. What is that? You know, are there certain pain points that some project in AI or data analytics can help alleviate for your customers so that they get more value? If yes, focus on that. If no, don't focus on that.
I think the other opportunity, which I think exists, is the pricing of POCs can help us alleviate some of the anxiety that comes down with these journeys, right? I think organizations need to develop either a policy or a framework on how they price a POC such that the appetite for being able to do the experiment is concomitant to the price that they're paying. And in so doing, I think it will liberate a lot of people to be able to make certain mistakes quite quickly and easily. What I've seen is that the price difference and variable between certain POCs is astonishing, first and foremost. But secondly, those variations in cost that they potentially will be playing starts to create the psychological barrier around this idea on being nimble and being able to try and change things. So if you've committed to a certain number and psychologically you think that that is already going to be the solution, the whole idea of being able to hold your assumptions likely kind of goes out the window. And so, you know, the advice I would give is, you know, spend some time developing a policy or a framework or an approach to how you want to price POCs that takes into consideration the risk appetite, but also bakes in it the ability to say, it's not working, dump it, move it, change it.
So back to you, Andy.
Look, innovation is about people for me. You can't innovate if you don't have people. People are the ones that have good ideas. Foundationally for us as Altron is we'd like to do it with our customers. So we always want to start innovation at our customer base and then work backwards. You can start internally, but you know the challenge with that is you then end up with a lot of invalidated assumptions that then you then have to go out and then test with your customers. So we'd love to start with our customers first, come up with ideas, and then work backwards from that, you know, from that way. So those would be the two foundations, people, and essentially it's two sides of the same coin. It would be your employees and it would be your customers' employees. That combination of magic is generally what leads to innovations, at least in a corporate customer-facing business.
And I've got another question for you there too, and that is, when it comes to starting to experiment with innovation, how do you do it in a sustainable and scalable way? And on that note, I know you've got a few things to say about prototypes and how prototypes can be used for testing some of those assumptions in an incubated way so that you minimize the risk of innovating.
Well, because innovation is about people, it should be no surprise that the biggest way to drive it is about organizational culture. How do you make sure that you develop a culture of innovation and make sure that it's embedded within the organization? That would be the key driving point. And of course, you need to think about enablers, right, for each organization. And it differs per organizational setup. In Altron, because we are a group of companies, we'd like to drive innovation from within each of our operating companies, and then we consolidate that into, you know, a single view across the group. But in a different organization, perhaps one that's, you know, got one operating company and Exco is really in control of all the group activities, and then you can really drive it in a much more centralized way. So I think each organization has to decide what is the right way to make sure that it's a sustainable thing. And prototypes are useful in that you don't go and build the full thing before you've gone and tested your assumptions. So even though you go and come up with the ideas with your customers, you still have to then build a prototype or a POC, as it's commonly called, and then you go sit with your customers and then figure out whether there's gaps in the assumptions, some of the things that we didn't think about. You typically test it with the end users to see how they adopt the solution, and then you can pivot from there. And the way that we do it at Altron is through our product teams. So once the innovation teams have developed this POC and we've proved that it's successful in the market, it does not mean that you'll necessarily have a successful product. So you still have to go through a proper product development lifecycle to ensure that there's a product market fit in terms of whatever it is that, you know, whatever gap that you think you've spotted in the market. And typically that product development lifecycle process can take anything from 6 months to a couple of years, right? And so you have to make sure that your product management capability is very, very strong. Typically organizations fail with innovation when they are not able to translate it into a real product. And what do I mean by product? It is something that meets a customer need. It is something that has a support service around it. So if something goes wrong, the customer can phone somebody and go, "Hey, this thing has gone wrong." It's got a business model. It's got a team that's running it on a day-to-day basis. There's a feature backlog where you continually iterate with new features as customers request them. You've got innovation. Make sure that you test that fit. And if customers go, "You know what, this is something that we really want," then you want to quickly turn that into a product that hopefully is scalable in the market.
Okay, so back to you, Musa. From your perspective, and maybe with some of the clients you've worked with in your more creative side of the world, do you have any examples of how data was leveraged to identify any problems or perhaps even come up with some solutions?
Absolutely. I think, you know, the first order, as has been mentioned, is to make sure that your data is credible, reliable, and stored in a place where it can be used effectively, which becomes obviously the call it the gateway solution. But we've seen certainly in multiple sectors where the application of being able to challenge internal bias has come from being able to interrogate data to pick up on certain assumptions that are baked into the way we think about products and customers. What is quite important is we see financial services as a big area that has been able to take data and specifically close data sets and start to get a lot more granular in understanding how to service their customers. There's been many articles written about the bias already baked into many of the algorithms that make decisions on credit and the rest of it when it comes to financial services. And we've seen that when big banks and institutions take it upon themselves to be able to start to become far more granular about their own data, they can start to escape some of those biases that might exist in massive data sets that aren't checked. Secondly, when it comes to development of new products, when you think about FMCGs that are all trying to design for newer customers, customers with shifting behaviors and tastes, when you start thinking about how you test for specific campaigns, whether they're going to drive impact or whether they're going to be able to land the message, those are all opportunities for you to be able to build out very clever ways to test the data and understand the scenarios of success. And then last but not least, with regards to how planning is done, the application of data and being able to know, you know, obviously retrospectively, performance data and indicators that speak to how your organization has fared, that coupled with the insight of individuals that are looking at data that can build models around scenarios going forward, helps to make far more nuanced and insightful decisions for many businesses. So our financial services are using data quite well, and those that are being bold and brave are getting the real value. And then scenario planning for many organizations that are thinking about how to build businesses that are future-proof and what scenarios they may face from an economic point of view as well.
Absolutely. So, Musa, let me stay with you then. So you've spoken about, of course, this ability to let go of things that are not serving you and to stay focused on the solution. I also wanted to ask you about distractions when it comes to technological adoption and innovation. What are some of the mistakes that you've seen with your clients or just generally in the market at large where people have followed spinnovation or distraction rather than real deep systemic innovative opportunities? Because yes, we want to give people the ability to take risks and to invest in change and to go for those big swings. But at the same time, we don't want to be deploying, let's face it, scarce resources in quite precarious economic times on things that are just going to be distractions from our general mission of solving our customers' problem.
I think there's a massive opportunity there. You know, in mathematical terms, as the good doctor will tell you, they've got this expression called solving from first principles, right? And it's being able to take complex problems and challenges and almost ask the why question six times in a row, and then get down to what the first principles issue that you're solving for is. You know, in that conversation, you'll be surprised at the thing that you start with and the thing that you end up with being fundamentally different, because the underlying issue that you're solving for often expresses itself very very differently to what the pain point eventually is. And I think that's a really important discipline, because what we eventually manifest as the pain is not necessarily what the solution should be. And many organizations spend a lot of time at a very surface level, and that's what ends up people getting committed into, you know, a fast idea that they think could solve the problem, but actually doesn't take it away. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I do think exposure outside of different sectors and industries becomes important. I think, you know, financial services people spend too much time in financial services. Pharmaceutical people spend too much time in pharmaceutical, you know, and so on and so forth. So the more experience you're getting from outside sectors or industries, as random as it may seem at the time, I think that's where you spark new types of thought. I mean, the way the brain functions is that, you know, every time you get stimulus that's contradictory to what your lived experience is, that's when your brain actually starts working. So the more time you're spending with people that are talking the same language and solving exactly the same problems, that, you know, one could argue that your probability of innovation starts to get lower and lower. So I always encourage an active pursuit of spending time outside of your industry in other sectors that are either close enough or completely not similar to your industry, and just trying to see what provocations would come as a result of those kind of interactions. And then the discipline is, how do you then apply that into your context to be able to get the most value?
So you've spoken about the quick wins, but there's also the other side of that. And that is, what are the deep transformations that, in your view, as an expert in this space, individuals, leaders, organizations should be investing in that are going to have a longer return period? The things that are going to take time, but will develop long-term sustainable competitive advantage. So the bigger risks, you know, we've spoken a lot about agility and being able to switch your view in response to changing problems and changing data. But what are some of the bigger risks that, if you were to advise a leader to start looking at seriously, that you would encourage organizations to actually sit down, invest the capex in those sorts of projects to stay ahead of the future?
Right. Well, if you take AI as a tool that can potentially accelerate how the development of your product or how you can deliver the service to your customer, then by definition, the guy that adopts it and is able to do that will win in the long run compared to you if you do not adopt it. So, you know, again, that's another fundamental and first principles thing. So if AI is an accelerant and you don't test how it can accelerate your business in the long run, by definition, you will lose out. So for me, that's what it's about. It's about the sustainability of business. I think every single person, boards, exco's, etc., they're all there to ensure the business, firstly, is sustainable over the long term, and then secondly, it can deliver returns to shareholders. And I think it's just part of their fiduciary duties, right, to investigate whether this technology can indeed help me to be, one, sustainable, and then two, deliver, you know, sustainable returns. I would say that would be, you know, going back to sort of King Four principles, that's how you should use it.
Excellent. And then back to you, Musa. When it comes to using innovative technologies to get closer to your customers rather than alienating your customers, which happens all too often when we try and automate critical value-adding chunks of our value chain away, we make that mistake. So what advice would you have for firms and organizations who want to use innovation to get closer to their customers and to deepen their competitive advantage rather than weaken it? And then as a follow-up, that, do you have any examples of companies locally or abroad who have either succeeded or failed at that in a dramatic sense?
Yes, absolutely. So I think a great example is Altron, you know, through their precision marketing platform. That's a really great example of, you know, putting their hands or their money where their mouth is, as they say, around helping people get a better understanding of their customers from a behavioral point of view. You know, traditionally, the global giants have done this exceptionally. If you think about the ad platforms like Google and Meta, and they've built, you know, a really, really complex ecosystem that allows a very simple way of being able to target and get to people at the place that matters most, at a conversion point that converts to business outcomes. You know, search trends, you know, now from a youth perspective, you know, TikTok being, you know, one of the major platforms driving that, is not only just looking at being able to give you demographic information, it's now starting to help you understand the psychological disposition of consumers, which is really important, right? So you can have two consumers that on paper look like fundamentally different people, but there's some very key and common things that they do from a behavioral point of view that make them ideal for specific products and services. So that's going beyond just the traditional data from a demographic point of view to now an understanding of humans and how they behave, which I think becomes quite important. That understanding, I think, will allow brands to be able to show up far better. And that understanding will convert and translate into organizations that can launch entire campaigns, new brands, new businesses, without spending a cent in traditional places. And so that fundamental drive towards that that intimacy is all about understanding data and customers far better. I also think what becomes really, really interesting is with e-commerce as an opportunity. I was having this debate the other day with a very intelligent lady who was telling me that, you know, if e-commerce works as well as it should, it actually creates an echo chamber for consumers. And so the question is, how do you get new brands into these consumers that are now in an echo chamber? Why? Because the algorithm was doing what the algorithm was supposed to do, give her more of what she's consumed and try and upsell on the things that it believes to be more accurate for her. So it creates such an interesting challenge, because how do you introduce new brands to people? And it almost comes full circle now in the, you know, above the line channels that now become your kind of entry point into these echo chambers by, you know, e-commerce platforms because of data intimacy. So I think it's quite fascinating, but I think the principle is that we need to think about nuance. We need to start considering that the ones and zeros that represented our consumers have got far more to them than the demographics that we used in the past. And those kind of can inform decisions around brand building and creating memorable experiences.
Well, that's the nature of progress, isn't it, right? We solve some problems, and along the way, we create new problems, often off the back of the success of our past solutions, right? And that, of course, creates more innovative opportunities for people to take advantage of. And on that note, back to you, Andy, and that is, from your perspective, what is the most innovative enterprise AI execution solution that you have seen or been involved with yourself?
I'm going to be heavily biased. Am I allowed to be? besides the precision intelligence platform that Musa referenced, we're actually also launching AI Factory, which will be a first in the country. We'll be selling intelligence as tokens to South African enterprises. So that was a massive, massive undertaking. From a customer perspective, I do have to, you know, give a shout out to Prime Media. You know, we did work with them around precision intelligence. And kind of helping them, you know, figure that out for their environment. So just their willingness for, you know, to get innovation going on that side was very good. From a customer perspective, that's probably the best one that I've seen. But yeah, if I'm being biased, you know, what we're launching right now in AI Factory has got to be the best, yeah.
Thank you all for joining us for this episode of Local Logic, a technology podcast for leaders, brought to you by Altron. Local Logic, a technology podcast brought to you by Altron, because local expertise drives global results.